Welcome to an impromptu episode of Nonproductive, literally forced upon us by James. James, introduce everyone and then tell us what the hell we're talking about.
Hey, everybody. I am James. I'm joined in studio by Pete,
Not
Al,
my name.
John, Frank, and AJ. We got a full crew here.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, we came. You lured us in with promises of role-playing games and beer and pretzels. And what do you want to talk to us about?
I want to talk about Star Wars.
Oh, wait. I can get pretzels.
I mean, feel like we've done that before.
We've all done this way too much.
No, but there's a reason I want to talk about Star Wars. Star Wars has just lost another director. The director of Episode 9, Colin Trevorrow, has been let go, shall we say, after quite a few rewrites of his screenplay of the final film of Star Wars. And this comes very recently after Lord and Miller were let go really late in the game from production on the Han Solo movie to be replaced by Ron Howard. And that's on top of problems with Gareth Edwards as director of Rogue One, where he was essentially replaced by the director of photography and assistant producer on the job to basically do an entire 3 to 4 months of reshoots and edit the film without his involvement.
So I don't see a problem here. What's your worry?
I mean, did you hear the comments? I believe Kathleen Kennedy said that she and Colin Trevorrow disagreed. She didn't think that Episode 9 needed as many Ewoks as he did.
Here's my problem. Everyone here is disagreeing with Kathleen Kennedy. And, you know, I get it. Kathleen Kennedy is a veteran in the film industry. She's worked with giants, obviously, like George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, and has produced great movies. But Star Wars came onto the scene with this promise of wanting to hire interesting and new directors and trying to take this franchise and create something amazing with it. Kind of a la the way Marvel does it. Let's take a look at Marvel as compared to Star Wars. When you have Marvel, right, you even have someone like, and I apologize for butchering his name, but Taika Waititi, who's directing the current Thor movie. I don't want to say he's been let to do whatever he wants, but he's basically taken a franchise that's goal was dark Shakespearean and been like, let's make this fun and enjoyable, you know? Really giving
80s hair metal.
Yeah, really giving it a more freedom than you would think, right, from this large machine, which is enjoyable. Sure, Edgar Wright might have been a touch too much freedom, but Star Wars is...
Ant-Man director, you mean?
Yeah, Ant-Man director might have been...
Would
have been maybe a touch too much freedom for them, which is why they parted ways. But this is literally every movie has cited production problems except for the current film they're working on right now.
So I misunderstood what you said when you said Marvel is doing. I, for whatever reason, thought you meant Marvel Comics.
No,
I actually think
Marvel movies.
So I can't really speak much on Marvel movies. I think maybe Marvel movies is having a little bit more success because it's more easily taking a page from the way the comics industry has worked over the years. And that might be what we have to see in these huge franchise universes that companies are owning. So here's the deal. And we actually talked about this on the fan club on Facebook. If you want to join, facebook.com/group/nonpro. When a film moves from something that a creator controlled and owned and made, and maybe has some influence from the producers and the, you know, some significant influences from the people who pay for the film to be made, and into the world of franchise where a corporate entity owns the characters, the how they interact, how they build a huge story that takes the place over several movies. You need a special filmmaker, a creator who knows how to work in that. So for Marvel Comics or DC Comics or anything, you know, when you are controlling Superman or Spider-Man or whatever, you know how to play with these toys and put the toys back in the toy box. I think that's what Bendis would, I think he may have been one of the people who coined it. And if we're dealing with these indie filmmakers or these edgy filmmakers or these new voices, they're going to maybe run into some conflict because I don't really know a time in history where we were so inundated with franchise. And hey, this is the world we created, geeks.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. Like, is everyone having a problem with one singular person?
No.
It seems to be that Star Wars is having I would almost say buyer's remorse. They set out with this goal and they hired a bunch of directors that they thought were going to work out. And then they realized that's not what we wanted. That's not how we want people playing with these toys.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. We don't want them to play this way with our toys.
Except
Rian Johnson. He's doing great for whatever reason. He fits perfectly, which I'm fine with. But
apparently he knew how to play with the toys.
But
maybe that's it.
What concerns me is that Marvel, for whatever reason, is less strict with their toys.
They give a longer leash.
Yeah, so people seem to have more freedom. We can get a really independent voice in Iron Man 3 for however good or bad it was. You can go in there and you can feel Shane Black's voice in the movie. You can feel the comedy brought to the original Iron Man that really sets the tone for the entire Marvel Universe designed by Jon Favreau. You know, you get this kind of high stakes action and spyness and thrillerness when you're working with the Russo brothers. You know, mm-hmm. they're each bringing their individual voice to it. But I can't tell you something about you know, I guess with episode 7
two.
Lens flare is the distinct J.J. Abrams voice.
I'll tell you what J.J. Abrams' voice is. It's being able to masterfully mimic other people's voices, including Steven Spielberg. That's what that was.
And there's absolutely no voice of Gareth Edwards in Rogue One.
Really? You didn't think so?
No, the strongest voice in Rogue One comes from Gareth Edwards, director of photography, because they kept him the whole time and the movie looks beautiful. But that's it.
Yeah, first of all, I was going to say we've only got one piece of evidence to go on so far, and that's Rogue One that we've actually seen the whole thing of. And Rogue One was not poop.
Yeah.
Rogue One was good. But my bigger point is when you compare it to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it's not apples to apples. Because when you talk about adapting Marvel comics, you are talking about a franchise and characters that have had multiple iterations over the years.
Mm-hmm.
There have already been so many different voices that the public is not going to buck and scream when you get something different, because the public can't agree on what the right version of Thor is.
Well, give it time. I think we're setting the stage that
cinematic
universe will be the right version.
But you have much more leeway in terms of public opinion and public expectations for the directors to get creative.
I'll even bounce off what Pete's saying here and saying it's even more complicated than that, in the idea that the Marvel Universe has characters to springboard off of. We have, literally for Star Wars, a universe, and not a very well-defined one at that, like as far as what goes on in there. Like, we can make a Han Solo movie, but as far as beyond that, Rogue One did not springboard off of existing characters that were in the Star Wars universe. Everything coming out of this is original material, sort of.
Mostly.
And it just sort of comes from, like, I don't feel it's comparable for that reason, too, because, like, you know, how could you?
A lot of existing characters.
Oh, yeah.
In that mythos. I have a deck of cards at home. there's a lot of material to work with.
Oh,
I don't
obviously
know what a
Jedi
Solo is.
That's not what I was saying.
I was about to say, there's a bunch of EU nerds about to Mad Max Fury Road down to the studio.
Shadows of the Empire!
But that's not really what I'm saying.
Like, yeah,
I'm not
I know.
Yeah. It's the same problem that those people who wrote those books or those games, those comic books had when they went in there, especially Old Republic. Like, Old Republic had to immediately go into a past Star Wars didn't have.
Right.
But that's, I guess, something, maybe this is me missing George Lucas. My heart skips a beat here. You know, George Lucas really invited people to come in and play around in this universe. And I'm going to be honest, the thing that I found most compelling out of modern Star Wars is Rebels, which is a TV show.
Right.
Right. I think the most interesting and compelling characters and new things they've created and done have been on a TV show that's on Disney, which is fine. But, you know, I understand that they're making a machine that wants to create safe movies. But how quickly do safe movies turn into boring movies? Rogue One was fine. I enjoyed Rogue One, but I can't come back and tell you that I'm going to be thinking about Rogue One the way I think about Luke Skywalker and Han Solo and those characters going forward. You know what I mean? And I think the only way to recapture what made Star Wars interesting is to actually allow some voice to come out.
I think you're going to be disappointed. I think you're going to be disappointed because the thing we're all missing, the difference between, let's say, Marvel franchise movies and Star Wars franchise movies is that with Marvel, let's be honest, you look at these stories and how much do they truly link together in a shared universe? A little. There are some touches where they reach out and touch each other.
Right.
But there's plenty of room for them to be stylistically and tonally different than one another.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for the majority of there's the full Star Wars universe storyline, you want it to all be saga-like. And then as far as what a Star Wars story is concerned, it feels like it latches on pretty tightly to that saga.
But
so I don't think you're going to have the room to make those kinds of different stories.
But that's my problem. That's an active decision they've made.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Right?
So I would totally have been fine if you came in and told me that the Star Wars numbered episodes, the 7, 8, and 9, are going to stick really close to the thing. We're going to be super strict about our directors and our choices and our story writing for that, because it's Luke and Leia and Han, and it's the continuation of their story, and now Rey and all this sort of stuff, and we want to keep that really close to the chest. But with this other stuff,
go nuts!
But this is where you get a little more freedom to play around. And it seemed like that when their first pitch was Rogue One, as compared to their now current slate of let's explore every existing character in the Star Wars universe again, because we need to know more about Obi-Wan and Han Solo, and isn't where over-explaining got us into trouble the last time, guys? So that's my problem. Rogue One felt like, even though it took place in an event that seemed pivotal and important directly to the Star Wars universe, it would be all new characters, all new things, and it would be kind of this gritty, kind of strong war movie. And while it kept some of that, I'll call it grit or darkness, I feel like so much of that was taken out. I mean, there's an entire movie left on the cutting room floor we will never see.
Yeah, right.
Never is a very long time, James.
If they want to control it that strictly, we'll never see it.
I feel like you're kind of moving in a wrong direction here, because I think you're blowing straight past episode 7 and what you're talking about right now. And like, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, J.J. Abrams went through without a hitch, but J.J. Abrams made a solid movie and they wanted him to continue. And J.J. Abrams is the one who decided to step down and allow for other people to step in, and that's why we got Rian Johnson to write 2 and direct 1, and, you know, bring in who was episode 9
Colin Trevorrow
the other day. Yeah. So we're saying the main trilogy that is currently out, this is like the first major hiccup of that.
But I feel like James's fear here is that J.J. Abrams episode 7 stuck really hard to the pattern of the other movies, and he fears that any director who might use their voice to deviate from that pattern is being silenced or asked to leave.
And it's tough because I don't even like Colin Trevorrow as a director.
I think what is probably going on here, it was an indecision on the part of Lucasfilm where they wanted to get fresh takes on the universe. They wanted to do the, you know, bring in the fresh directors. But they also failed to move aside from the familiar stories. You know, they committed to doing a Han Solo movie, and they hired the guys that did the Lego movie. And I think what happened was they got into that and they said, you know what, we love these guys, they're great, but we don't like the story they're telling with these characters. You know, maybe if there were a fresh set of characters for them to play with.
But that isn't the story that's being told. The story that's being told is more like what Frank said. It's they came into the sandbox, and even more harshly than what Frank said, they came into the sandbox. Phil Lord and Chris Miller came into the sandbox, and they're like, we've directed all of the movies and television work we've done, which to date has all been relatively successful and made quite a bit of money this way. And Kathleen Kennedy was like, that's fine, but here at Star Wars, we do it like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to a point where they couldn't take it anymore. Or, well, where she couldn't take it anymore and they were let go, right? Even J.J. Abrams, who directed Episode 7 and did a good job, we enjoyed Episode 7, or I did anyway, said that after, and as some time has distanced himself from it, more directly he has said, I think I'm done with franchises for a while. There was certainly a lot I had to deal with and concede on Star Wars. Their grip is tight.
Mm-hmm.
It's very tight, right? Mm-hmm. And Rian Johnson seems to be doing a good job managing it on episode 8. They're really thrilled with him, and the sounds like they're going to probably offer him the chance to do 9, which would be cool, legitimately. As long as 8's good, then it could be terrible. I think that's my concern. It's they're dictating exactly how they want the toys to be played with.
You know who controls characters in the franchise basically for the movie Get Out? Jordan Peele. He probably has at least a very strong hand in it. And I might even, as far as I know, ownership of it depends on what his agreement with the production house is. You know who owns and controls Star Wars?
Lucasfilm. Disney.
Yeah. So I'm saying that your fears could be real. I mean, we only have, like Pope said, we only have 2 examples, really, maybe 1. But it's possible. But this is the world that franchise built. And if you want to see an example of how some of this stuff can play out, we have an awesome thread on our fan club on facebook.com/group/nonpro where we discuss what if George Lucas had only made 1 Star Wars movie.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, I remember this.
And that is approximately the reaction I got for even conceptualizing it.
You're the worst person in history.
Yeah, that was...
You're worse than Mussolini.
Yeah, true.
You're as bad as Hitler.
Well, oh, equal. Wait. Worse than as bad? All right.
You're worse than
sense.
James Monroe.
Oh.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. I guess that's some... So, yeah, I think it's interesting that this is happening.
Not really that bad.
Are you going to pay attention to future news on the rotating directors that exist in the Star Wars universe?
I mean, yes, but I think Lucasfilm, you'll see Lucasfilm making much different choices now going forward. I think they've decided that they know which director this they want. They want the Ron Howards, the Steven Spielbergs, the J.J. Abrams. Maybe hopefully the Rian Johnsons.
I just really hope that we find out that all these new directors that they picked were like, all right, and at this point we wake up and it's a dream. And then Inception horns. No, we don't need a score. Inception horns all the time. And then it's...
That would certainly make me feel better.
Yeah, that they were just going crazy. Yeah,
that
they were just
nuts?
Like not getting it. They were totally just out of the loop. You're like, well, no. I mean, at some point, the Han Solo movie becomes Lego, right? This is for Lego Star Wars, isn't it? No, it isn't. This was regular Star Wars. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. We should go.
Andy Warhol's Star Wars.
The sequel. All right. Well, are we allowed to go now, James?
I mean, no, but I guess we can stop the mics.
All right, fine. For more on this, go on to our fan club where we're really, really getting our asses handed to us on this one. Good night.
Midichlorians.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.